ready?
Yes.
Okay. All right, so we're back on the record in the matter of the application of Dameron Valley Water Works LLC for approval of general rate increase and expansion of service area at docket number 15-2025-01. Mr. Pace, before we broke, you wanted to interject, and I told you you'd have a chance shortly, and then we went to lunch without giving you the chance to discuss. Did you want to weigh in on water rights versus water shares and help us understand that, or what were you hoping to
discuss? Well, I wanted to clarify that just so you were absolutely...
Excuse me.
Thank you. In the beginning of 1987, when we got the irrigation right approved, we simply issued quitclaim deeds. Then a few years later, I think it was probably 10 years later, we realized the problem that we were having with quitclaim deeds. If somebody sold their home, moved away, forgot to add the deeded water right to the deed, moved away and we couldn't find, or he died or whatever, mm-hmm. that water right was lost. I couldn't find family members or somebody to attest, that water right was lost.
Okay.
And it's happened on one instance, and on another instance we were able to run down the person. So when we realized that, we changed to certificates. And all those letters that you read that Barbara handed out were letters re-encouraging people for their own benefit to not have to worry about it. Leave the water right in my name. That way, when the state engineer needs an adjudication or an update or anything regarding that water right, I can deal with it myself, and they don't need to worry about it, right? The request comes to me. But especially in the case of somebody forgetting to deed a water right on, and we can't find the person to clarify it. So that's why we went to certificates. And so now we have kind of a confused situation. Barbara is an embodiment of it. She has one deeded right and one certificated right.
Okay.
That's what I was explaining.
But as far as the company is concerned, the holder's rights are the same.
Exactly the same.
It's a use right.
Right. And they'll never use their right if it's a certificated right, because if they died, didn't keep the right active, I'll keep the right active forever for them.
Okay.
And if for some reason something happened, that person sold their lot, forgot to transfer the certificate with it, but I knew that that person owned a right, we can't find him to get them to sign the certificate, I can issue a new certificate. I don't have a state agency involved. So that was why we went to certificates.
Okay.
And the other thing I wanted to point out, maybe this needs to come later, is the $50,000 that Barbara's requesting is a very minor thing. I farmed Dameron Valley in the early years for 20 years of alfalfa. We irrigated March, and that's what the state engineer considers irrigation system, March through October. So I didn't just arbitrarily come up with that 8-month period. She is right, in March and October, you could have a cold spell, especially in October, where you actually didn't use the water. But for the long term, right now, yes, we have excess water. Right now, yes, we could let people use more of the share in the summer. But long-term, balancing-wise for the system, we just adopted the 8-month period that the state considers the irrigation period.
Okay.
And many times, and when we were farming, we irrigated sometimes even in the winter if it were really dry. It's healthy to put water in the ground even after the alfalfa or whatever you're growing stops growing. So I would like to keep it at the 40,000 over 8 months. And I don't think it's a big hardship, really, because the water is... well, has been very cheap, and I think will remain reasonably cheap.
Okay, thank you. Ms. Yelly, I think that I understand the sort of big picture of your argument, and I do have some specific questions that I want to ask you. I'm sure the division has some questions as well, but I feel bad that your witness has been on the phone with us all day and is back on the phone with us and has not yet been able to participate. Would you like to go ahead and ask your witness questions now so that maybe we can release him? Although he's perfectly welcome to stay on the phone if that's what he wants to do for the remainder of the hearing.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor. Mr. Barnum, would you state your and spell your name for the record?
Do you want to swear him in?
Okay, just a moment. Mr. Barnum, I'm going to swear you in. So would you please raise your right hand and let me know when you are ready?
Yes.
Do you solemnly swear that the evidence and testimony you provide today is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and this you do under penalty of perjury?
I do.
Thank you. And Ms. Yelly, you might need to come up here. I'm not sure that he's going to be able to hear you very well from there.
And if you could mic him, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I use your microphone?
Yeah, I'll just scoot over.
Guilty doing that.
No.
Mr. Barnum, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Would you please state and spell your name for the record?
It's Barry, B-A-R-R-Y, Barnum, B-A-R-N-U-M.
Please describe to the people here your professional background, particularly as it applies to water issues.
Okay, I've been a professional registered engineer in the state of Utah for over 30 years. And for 15 years, I worked for the city of St. George and was in the capacity of the water services director. I retired about 2 years ago, and since that time have performed some consulting, specifically with the Washington County Water Conservancy District on developing a repair and replacement plan, which I believe was adopted by the board.
Was what by the board?
Adopted.
Thank you.
In the course of your professional career, did you evaluate rates for water deliveries?
Yes.
And that's for the city of St. George?
Yes, uh-huh.
And did those include systems where other parties' water rights were delivered through the system?
In some cases, yes.
And did you also then take into account charges needed for repair and replacement and the fair allocation of charges to the various users?
Yes, we did. That was always one of our goals, was to allocate costs fairly and equitably.
Have you reviewed the Division of Public Utilities analysis in this matter?
Yes.
And what is your evaluation of their recommendation, their amended recommendation?
Of the amended recommendation, I think it's it has a very rational basis, that it's easily explainable, that it's defensible, that it meets the needs of all of the users and the needs of the company to stay solvent. And I think by placing the ability of the irrigation users to use their water before they go into the conservation tiers, I believe that it will actually promote conservation, where the original rate recommendation would have not promoted conservation among irrigation users. And I think that the amended recommendation will allow owners of irrigation water to use their water before they start to use Cameron Valley water, and will present no financial hardship to the system or the company, because the fixed charges are paid in the base charge, and the 30 cents per 1,000 gallons covers the delivery charge, and the 15 cents additional on top of that is an additional capital recovery fee, and should cover any impact the irrigation users have on the system.
Thank you.
Microphone, just a little closer. Microphone.
Oh, sorry. You listened to the morning's testimony, correct?
Yes.
And so you're aware that there was some discussion about the and Mr. Pace just testified about the amount of water that might be delivered pursuant to these water rights. In your capacity with the city of St. George, have you had experience with those types of situations, and in particular the seasonal requirements for water use?
Are you asking about seasonal variation in the amount of water needed?
Yeah.
Okay. I did, in my position, I monitored the monthly variation in system demand for the city of St. George, and found that the monthly demand was pretty much took the shape of a normal distribution. And during the winter months, of course, it was very flat on both ends. But during the irrigation months, the middle 8 months of the season, it would go from, the demand would, the irrigation demand would go from about zero up to a peak that was around the month of July, and then it would taper back down to pretty much by November be out of the system, that demand. The ideal situation for 1 acre foot in the Darama Valley location would be a peak, this is based on St. George usage, would be a peak of 120,000 gallons per month. If all of the months would not use that much, that would be just the highest usage month. That would be the most ideal situation for the irrigators.
Do you have any, based on your review of the testimony and listening to the testimony and review of the documents on file with the, have you reviewed the documents on file with the Public Service Commission?
Yes.
Have you reviewed the testimony of Brooks Pace, which I introduced, I believe, as Exhibit 4?
Yes.
Just the microphone.
And of Mr. Long?
Yes.
And given what, also the proposed, the description and the proposed tariff document regarding the pipe sizes in the system?
Yes, uh-huh.
So based on what you know of all these factors, what impact do you think, what do you think the company can handle in terms of delivery to irrigators who hold water rights without harming the system deliveries to all of the users?
I haven't done a detailed engineering analysis on it, but my opinion is that there would not be a negative impact on the system. In St. George, for example, we have 4-6, 4-inch, 6-inch, and 8-inch water lines. And the smallest meter we use is the 3/4-inch meter. I believe the smallest meter that Tamarind Valley uses is a 5/8-inch meter. Now, we never found 3/4-inch or 1-inch water meters to cause a negative impact on our system. And I think Demeron Valley's pipes are maybe even a little bit larger than ours in some cases, than St. George's in some cases, where they are 6, 8, and 10-inch lines. So I don't think there would be a negative impact on the system of supplying the 1 acre foot over a period of 8 months, even with a very high cap on it.
Thank you, Mr. Barnum. That's all the questions I have.
Thank you. Ms.
Thank you.
Ms. Schmidt, do you have any questions for this witness?
I do.
Okay.
Should I come up there as
well?
I
think it might be best.
Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Barnum. I'm Patricia Schmidt, and I'm the Assistant Attorney General who represents the Division of Public Utilities in this proceeding. I have just a few questions for you.
Okay.
Are there crops whose water demand peaks at different times?
Almost any crop, if it's seasonal, will demand more water during the hotter months of the season. Irrigation season usually starts in March. It's not really hot in that time period, so it doesn't require a great deal of water. But toward the center part of the growing season, during the months of June, July, and August, the evapotranspiration, which is a measure of evaporation from the soil and the surface of the land, and the transpiration from the plants themselves. The evapotranspiration is very high during the hot season, and thus the plants and the ground require larger quantities of irrigation water.
Do different plants take different amounts of water to sustain them?
Yes.
Could you, for example, give an example of, say, an alfalfa field and potatoes?
I don't have those numbers in front of me.
Okay. They were referenced in an exhibit that Ms. Helge introduced and was accepted, so but I'll move from that. Does alfalfa take a lot of water?
I don't know. You know, compared to other plants, you know, I don't know if it takes more or less than other crops such as wheat or corn. And it probably takes less than, say, a golf course.
Okay. Turning now to the Dameron system, Ms. Helge asked you questions about pipe size, deliverability, and the effect of delivering, let's just call it, more water on the Dameron system. Do you recall that?
Yes, ma'am.
Have you ever physically inspected the Dameron water system?
Briefly, about a year ago, another engineer and I were hired to look at the Dameron Valley system. I don't have any of the documents that were produced from that in my possession. I've since retired. My impression of the system was favorable.
What do you mean by favorable?
It seemed to have adequate supply. It seemed to have adequate storage. I believe that Mr. Pace is conscientious in his operation of the system, and the pipe sizes seem to be adequate to deliver all of the water necessary for the system, including fire flows.
By whom were you employed to do that review and analysis?
I'm not sure what the organization is called. But it was essentially the our main contact was the fire department there.
Okay, thank you very much. Those are all my questions.
Mr. Pace, any questions?
Thank you.
Yes, can you hear me, Mr. Barnum?
Yes.
This is Brooks Pace. Yeah, you know, you're an expert. You know systems well, and you know balancing of systems, and you do, I'm sure, understand that our system is growing from about a third of its build-out size, where we currently are, to three times its size. So the rules that I put in place, this 40,000 gallons a month, I don't know whether you heard this discussion a couple of minutes ago. I mentioned to the judge that the it's a balancing thing, right? I mean, I can't have somebody just use any amount they want, so 50,000 we could probably live with, but long term, at build out, when all of our water is allocated, it would probably be a hardship. Not to mention, right now, the billing difficulty of letting people use different amounts during different billing periods. Right now, the computer program is complicated, but somebody would have to interface with every irrigation user to know when they had used their full 324,250 gallons, right? So it just,
yes,
it is such a small issue, I think. And generally, as you said yourself, the state engineer considers the irrigation system an 8-month period from 1 March to the end of October. And you also stated, and I agree that it's true, that in the summer plants do need more water. But I don't know of another way that we could really divvy up. You know, we have about 95 to 100 irrigation customers. So about a quarter of our people own various size shares of irrigation water. So it would mean doing hand bills for those billing periods for those people during the 8-month period. And that it would just be hand-produced bills. It would be really complicated. Miss Yelly has raised this issue. This is the second hearing now that she has raised this issue and fought this battle at the first hearing in 2008 that she was on the phone at and made this case. The judge rejected it as not germane to the hearing of our conservation rate that we were applying for. At earlier in this hearing, you may have heard Ms. Schmidt say she didn't think this was an issue for the PSC, it was an issue for the civil courts. So I'm wondering why we're spending so much time on it. But we are, and thank you for taking your time, and thank you for complimenting our system and giving it high reviews. It gives me an opportunity to say that we are always in negative points. I think the last report was that we are a negative 20. If you get as high as 98, I think it is, or 90 points above, they shut the system down. So negative points are good. The more negative points you've got, the better. We've always been a highly rated system. As you said, we've always been very conscientious about it. Never stood back and afraid to build another tank if we felt it was needed, drill another well if the redundancy was required. So we're just pleading for a little bit of uniqueness to our system here. We've always, you may have heard me say earlier, tried to track not the way St. George bills, but the rough rates they charge, knowing that 25 years ago we were going to lose a lot of money doing that. Public Service Commission understood we were going to lose a lot of money, but they realized that it, if I was willing to subsidize it in order to sell land, because I couldn't sell land if I were charging $5 a thousand gallons, they were willing to live with it. Now, because of the 8-year crisis developers have been through, I've been lumped into the bag of many of those that have failed, and they're creating a one-size-fits-all. So I wish you would address the tiered system that we do have, since you have studied it, and just because we've been doing it that way for 39 years, because it has been approved through at least 5 rate hearings heretofore, and in this rate hearing they're throwing the conservation rate right out the door. There will be no conservation rate.
Mr. Pace, do you have a question for this witness? Because really,
I'm asking him to comment on my proposed rate structure.
Okay, so there you go. Do you have any comments about the utility's proposed rate structure?
Based on, I haven't examined the books.
You're not required to comment on it.
Just by the work that he has done. I do believe that the full cost should be recovered for the system, and I do believe that a capital reserve fund should be established in order to sort of levelize the cost to the users, and if there was a catastrophic event, there would be money there to deal with it. The system, the Darwin Valley system, is small enough that it doesn't have a lot of diversification in pipelines or assets or storage. If one storage tank went down and had to be repaired, that would be a significant financial burden on the system and on the users, because they would eventually have to pay for it. So assuming that Mr. Long's numbers are correct, and I have no reason to doubt it, because he's been very thorough, I believe that the rate structure, the amended rate structure proposed by the division, will cover the full cost and adequately fund the system. As the division states, is in the best public interest, and I support that completely.
Okay, thank you.
But is that then stating that you don't think that my proposed rate structure would cover the cost of the system? It may, you know, the division is concerned that there's certain customers, those that are on the conservation rate currently, that are being subsidized by the others. people in the valley don't particularly feel that way. The division also feels the irrigators are being subsidized by the others with the low irrigation rate. People in the valley don't think that because they see the advantage to the irrigation for all. So specifically the question, do you, in looking at our rate structure, don't you believe it will cover the cost of the system, albeit a slightly different way, and also leave our conservation rate intact?
It may cover the cost of the system ultimately. Part of this is that there's more than one way to do a rate structure. My preference is to have fixed cost covered in the base rate. That way, if everyone stops using water, then the system is still paid for, and the debts are still paid, and it doesn't present a financial hardship on the company or its ability to deliver water. The ability to deliver water is different from actually delivering water and being paid for the water you deliver. For example, Irvine Ranch in California has adopted this model, and it works very well for them. Their fixed costs are covered in the base rate, and it's in my mind, and from the other systems I've looked at in my previous employment, it appears to me that this is a very economically efficient way to set up a rate structure. And that way, the water itself doesn't bear the cost, any of the fixed costs. The water itself can be priced such that it will carry the variable cost, the cost of delivery, and also help build up reserve fund, and will promote conservation through the tiered rate. I don't believe conservation applies to irrigation water that is privately owned, because an individual is subject to forfeiture. But conservation for a company, for the customers of a company or a city or a conservancy district, should certainly be encouraged to conserve. And I think the amended proposed rate from the division does exactly that. Where the rate you've proposed puts the conservation tiers in effect before before users allowed to use their own water, will not actually promote conservation for the irrigation users.
No, I think you're missing the point. Our rate structure...
Okay, I don't want you to argue with this witness.
No, I need to clarify that it's something he doesn't understand.
Look,
he's a very smart man.
If you have a question, you may ask it.
I have a question. Thank you. The question is, in my current rate structure and my proposed rate structure, and in 2008 this was approved, we created a conservation rate that gave an individual a financial incentive to conserve. Since 1977, we've had a big stick for if you don't conserve by these very high overage rates. But in 2008, the division approved and the commission approved a conservation rate. Do you not think that is appropriate? Yes, it is not there. Those conservation people are not covering the base rate. That is a fact. So they are actually getting a financial incentive to conserve on the backs of those that chose not to go on the conservation rate. But everybody has the right to convert to the conservation rate. So I don't see it as a subsidy or a unfair treatment of the standard rate payers, just because some wise families choose to live within 400 gallons of water a day, which is not difficult to do. And they can save $100 to $150 a year.
What is your question for this witness?
I'm asking him if he would say that that is really not an appropriate way to sell water, since he has been in this business a lot longer than most of us. Do you think that is an unfair? I mean, the division is, their problem with it is they're saying your standard rate payers are subsidizing the conservation people. And I'm saying, good, fine. Get on the conservation rate yourself.
If you have a comment, you can certainly make it. I'm not quite sure what the question is.
The question is, do you think it's
please don't interrupt me, Mr. Pace. So I'm not going to require you to answer it. If you have a comment, you may make it.
Okay, the only comment I would like to make is that you have to look at every connection, not just on what water it's using, but what water it can potentially use. And if for example, a situation would change for a particular homeowner or a water user on the system, even though they may be on a conservation right, if this change of situation or change of ownership may cause a different water usage. So you have to look at what the system, what obligation comes with that connection to the system, the obligation to deliver. Not the actual amount delivered, but what is obligated to be delivered by the company. And I think in order to make the costs fair for everyone, putting the fixed cost, which includes the obligation to deliver, to equally allocate that among all users is a sound and rational way to bill for the system, and then let the conservation apply to what they actually use. You know, that way, no one is subsidizing anyone else, and yet they still get a benefit for conservation. Those who do conserve still get a benefit for conservation, and while those who don't conserve still pay their fair share. That's all I have to say.
Okay, thank you. Any follow up?
Mr. Barnum, can you hear me?
Yes.
Have you reviewed Exhibit 5, which is my water bills, that shows the standard deviation or the normal distribution curve that you mentioned earlier?
I'm sorry, you're sort of breaking up there.
I guess I'll.
Do you recall reviewing Exhibit 5, which is my water bills?
Yes, I looked at it.
And that reflects the normal distribution curve that you mentioned earlier?
In a way it does, yes. Uh-huh. It's, you know, not exact, but that's a generalization. It's not, your water bill is not an uncommon distribution.
Do you believe that, say, setting the cap at 50,000 gallons, it is reasonably likely that anybody would be able to use an acre foot of water over that 8-month period?
Well, I think you'd have to maybe over irrigate a little bit in the shoulder months, you know, the beginning and ending months of the season, but it would certainly give the irrigator a greater chance of using all of their water, and I give them more flexibility in using them.
Thank you.
Ms. Schmidt, anything else?
Nothing further from the division.
All right.
Just, do you have a comment, Mr. Barnum, on the complication to our billing system?
On what?
The complication to our billing system if irrigators have a right to use in varying amounts the 320,000 gallons in a single year, then it's how do we bill it? How would we bill it if they use, in March, that she uses 25,000 gallons of her irrigation allotment, and then in May and, you know, in July and August, she's using, say, 50 or 60,000 gallons a month. I mean, how do we just hand bill those? There, I don't think there's a system that can be so precise. I don't know. Don't you see that as a complication? And also long-term a balancing problem for the system?
Well, in the city of St. George, and this is the only one I can really speak to, we had similar situations where some users were allowed a certain amount of water at a certain rate over the period of a year, and we would just have to monitor it. And when they reached that amount, then the billing rate would change and we would do it. I'm not aware of any software, any billing software that will do that automatically. It has been done. We did it.
By hand.
George.
By hand.
And, you know, it's an accommodation to the users and, additional bookkeeping for the company. I admit that, but, I don't have a solution for it, no.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Barnum. I believe we can release you as a witness. Your testimony has been very helpful, and I appreciate it, and thank you for your patience with us today as well. You're now excused, and you may hang up and go about your day if you'd like to. You may also remain on the line if you want to hear the rest of the proceedings today.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. Ms. Yelly, I just want to try to pick up where we left off before we went to the break. And I will just comment that the commission takes seriously the issues that you've raised. The commission does not want to be in violation of water law. The commission is not convinced that rate setting and water law necessarily have a nexus, but is giving you the opportunity to explain what you consider to be the nexus. And that's why we're giving this some time, Mr. Pace, to answer your question. So in chapter 73, is beneficial use defined?
Yes.
Where is that?
Okay, give me one second, Your Honor. I do have the statute with me, I think. Well, I may be, it's 73-1-3. It says beneficial use is the basis of the right to use. And I can explain to you, there are uses that are acknowledged as beneficial uses, primarily, I believe, through the case law.
Through case law, okay.
And there are uses that are not accepted as beneficial uses.
Okay, so let me just ask you then, do you consider it possible for a person who has a water right or a water share to make use of the water in a way that would be considered wasteful rather than beneficial?
Yes, I think that if you were using the water in such a way that it was exceeding the demand of your crop and basically running off your property and doing nothing, that would be a waste.
All right, so now I'm going to direct your attention to the public utilities statute, to section 54-4A-6, which discusses the objectives that must be kept in mind by the commission, by the division, in setting rates. And if you look down to subsection 4, it says, for purposes of guiding the activities of the division, the phrase just, reasonable, and adequate, meaning rates, encompasses but is not limited to the following criteria. And it talks about fair apportionment, and it talks about the lowest cost that is reasonable, and so on. But if you look down to subsection F, lowercase f, it says that rates are set with the intent to protect against wasteful use of public utility services. So I need you to reconcile that language with your argument that is essentially it is illegal for there to be an intent to encourage or require conservation. Because the commission is given an intent right here to prevent against waste.
I think that the water delivered under the company's water rights is fully covered by that section of the code, and that there's no limitation on, other than the reasonableness factor and so forth, on the commission's treatment of those water rights that belong to the company. But I think that water rights that belong to individuals, that have been deeded out to individuals, have a different standing. It may very well be that that, you know, it complicates things because it's in the same system. And that's why I believe that 3073-1-9 should govern the tariff for bona fide water rights. And this section should govern the tariff for Dameron Valley Water Company water rights. They are not in the same legal position.
And yet the Public Service Commission sets rates for both. And the certificate that you've provided says that your right to use is subject to the rates that are in the tariff.
But my water right does not. My water right has no such limitation. And I believe that such a limitation would be inconsistent with Utah law.
Does your water right state that it includes a fixed rate, or that it includes a right for you to be charged what you wish to be charged?
My water right encompasses Utah Code 73-1-9 as the parameter upon which I believe the Public Service Commission should determine a proper irrigation delivery tariff.
Okay, so if you decide that you can't afford to use all of the water that you have a right to use, how is it that it's forfeited, and to whom is it forfeited?
Well, that's complicated, okay? It is, as a matter of law, forfeited. Whether or not the forfeiture is declared is a subject of a number of possible considerations. Any wise owner of a water right works hard to avoid being in that situation. It's a simple fact.
If I may just make one, what I think is an important correction, and I apologize for interrupting. There are specific ways in which a water right is forfeited, and it is a long, lengthy process. Currently, it requires a period of 7 years. A judicial action is required, and things like that. So it doesn't just happen automatically. And I'd just like to refer the court at this moment to section 73-1-4, which talks about reversion to the public for abandonment or forfeiture.
Okay. It does revert to the public, and in fact, I believe the case law says that if you have not used your water for a period of 7 years, as a matter of law, it is deemed forfeited. But if there's no judicial declaration, then you're just at risk, unless and until something were to occur that would trigger such a declaration. In the Virgin River Basin right now, they're going through a general adjudication of water rights. Who knows what kind of risks might be posed in the course of that? The state engineer doesn't usually proceed precipitously with those things. So this is just, there's just a series of potential scenarios that could occur, and it would be difficult for me to speculate about, you know, all of them.
All right. So if you decide to pay and use your entire allocation, you would have no risk of forfeiture, correct?
If I use my entire water right, I should be protected from forfeiture.
And if your neighbor decides not to use and not to pay for the entire water right, then your neighbor would be subject to forfeiture.
Potentially, yes.
Okay, so my question is, are you suggesting that the commission is somehow required to set rates individually, user by user, according to what the user is willing and able to pay?
No, I think that let me do it this way, if I may. Parties are liable to the other for the reasonable expenses of maintaining, operating, and controlling the same in proportion to the share of the use or ownership of the water to which he is entitled. That sets the basis for which water rights should be delivered through the Dameron Valley Water System. And I have fundamentally stipulated that I do not dispute the DPU's determination that 45 cents a thousand arguably meets the standard.
Right.
Now, if I, you know, I just haven't chosen to try to get into that level of quibbling.
But your argument is that that rate has to apply to the total acre foot amount.
Yes.
That any water right holder.
Yes.
Is entitled to use.
All water rights holders per acre foot For that entire 8 foot, yes.
Okay, I understand. Ms. Schmidt, do you have questions for Ms. Yelly?
I do. May I have just a moment?
You may.
Could I raise an issue while she's
taking a
moment? I'd like to read you from the protective covenants or the contract between me and landowners in subdivisions that came later. Unfortunately, when Ms. Yelly's lot was subdivided, we didn't have irrigation water. It was subdivided in 1977, and the irrigation rate was approved in 1987. But in the subdivisions that got irrigation water after that, there was this wording: these water rights cannot be transferred away from the lot. The landowner with irrigation rights receives a special rate up to 40,000 gallons per month per acre foot after he has used his total culinary allotment at the culinary rate. This is a contract between me and the owners of all these subdivisions, so it's a contract you couldn't really probably get involved in, or in a court of law would probably back me because I have a contractual agreement. But with Ms. Yelly, it wouldn't apply because her subdivision didn't have this wording because we didn't have irrigation rights at the time. But that was always the intent, and so most of the people that have irrigation rights, probably of the 280 acre feet of irrigation rights that are out there, well over 200 have this clause written into it. So it would only be the few subdivisions, hers and the homesteads and the, you know, about three or four subdivisions, maybe 150 lots, that if you said you got a letter who use up to 50,000 in those months, it would only apply to those.
Excuse me, would you use the microphone, please?
I'm very sorry. Okay.
Closer. Bring it to your mouth, please.
Do you need me to say that again? Want me to start over?
No.
Okay.
I mean, do you want to see this document, or?
No. If I think I understand.
If I may just make one more statement, this time concerning what Mr. Pace said. The Public Service Commission's jurisdiction is specifically limited by law and does not include jurisdiction over all contracts. That's an established point of law. The Public Service Commission's jurisdiction applies to rates and services provided by public utilities. Contracts are between an individual and another individual are handled, and the meaning of those contracts are handled in district court.
Thank you.
Okay. Michelle, how are you?
Yeah, good.
The issues that you have raised blend in some ways legal issues and factual issues. So I'm going to try and stay away from the legal issues because the division will address those in its reply brief. Do you agree with Mr. Pace's description that a water right is the same as a water share?
In this context? In this context, I would put it the opposite. I would say that a water share has the same bundle of rights that a water right clearly has.
When, we'll use you as an example, when you have used your 12,000 gallons and then you have used your 40,000 gallons at the irrigation rate, then is your water shut off?
No, I just have to pay what I would consider a penalty rate as for irrigation water. Although I will say again, as I did earlier, that the way the DPU is doing it this time, the next tier up is a more reasonable tier because it's a conservation rate, but it's, I believe, 60 cents a thousand, which is much more reasonable than 350 a thousand, for example. So it provides some cautionary disincentive to the irrigation right holder and going over, if it has to be 40,000 gallons, for example, that amount. But it gives, nevertheless, you could still use that additional 12,000 gallons. I guess it would be at, 60,000?
So just to make clear, so if my water right entitled me to, and I'm just going to pick this number out of the air, 75,000 gallons of water a month when we did this little water right thing. would I be prohibited from getting all $75,000, or would I just have to pay the Public Service Commission approved rate to receive delivery of that quantity of water?
I would have to pay the Public Service Commission approved rate as applied to my water rate.
Thank you. Moving on to your Exhibit 1, which is the a copy of the warranty deed.
Yes.
Can you read the last two paragraphs, the one that starts together with one, and then water rights into the record, please?
Together with 1 acre foot of water from water users paying 81.
Excuse me, just a little bit louder and slow down. Just a little bit.
Together with 1 acre foot of water from water users claim number 81-2167, certificate number 12318, to be used for irrigation purposes in Dameron Valley Meadows, lot 34.
And then the next paragraph also, please.
Water rights conveyed by this deed are restricted to use for irrigation purposes only and may not be sold or transferred outside of the Dameron Valley subdivision, Washington County, Utah.
Do you see the words delivery in those two paragraphs?
No, I don't believe I do.
Do you see the word delivered in those two paragraphs?
Well, if it's not there, I don't see it.
So what you got, in addition to the real estate, lot 34, was the 1 acre foot of water. Is that correct?
Yes, along with all the legal rights and accoutrements that go with the water right.
Turning to the next page, which is the warranty deed. Or actually, let's turn to the last page, where it's the Dameron Valley Water Works Irrigation Share Certificate.
Yes.
Could you please take a look at that?
Yes.
Do you see the words delivered there?
No.
So it is true that what you are getting is the one share of irrigation water, the 320 gallons per year per share, at the rates and consumption levels specified by the tariff. Is that correct?
I don't believe that.
I'll address that in my legal brief. And those are all my questions.
Mr. Pace, any questions for Ms. Yelly?
Not at this time.
All right. Ms. Yelly, is there anything you'd like to add before we're going to go to closing statements next, I think. Is that where we are? Okay.
I don't have any more testimony.
All right. Let's see. It's the applicant. This is the first I've done, with a Public Service Commission. So in the hearings I've done for other divisions, the person with the burden of proof goes first and last, and it would generally be the applicant. Does that mesh with what you're expecting?
That meshes with my experience before the Public Service Commission, if closing statements are given.
Okay, very good. Mr. Pace, this is your closing statement, your opportunity to put into the record anything more that you want the commission to understand, and any response that you want to make to what else has been put into the record today. Go ahead.
Well, some of the things that I brought up that I could, some of the items that I couldn't bring up because I sort of couldn't turn them into questions, so I'm going to raise. We are a stably financial company. My son and my other two sons and my daughter are all trained operators of the system. One of them is the actual operator of the system. They grew up with this company, with this development, and I can assure you they will carry on my method of operating it, even to the extent of subsidizing it if necessary. The division claims that our rate is complicated. It's not complicated. It's been around 39 years. We're all very used to it. It may be complicated to somebody new to it. And we regret, I won't say resent, but I do regret that the division is so determined to do a one-size-fits-all sort of approach to our rate and not let us continue on with our current odd tiered rate structure. Our rates have been progressive from the beginning. The conservation rate just gives an incentive to conserve, and of probably all of the things I would like to see preserved is that, if in any way the division or you or the commission can wrap their minds around giving some break to some individual who will try to live within the 400 gallon a day allocation and thereby get some kind of a financial reward for that. That is probably the most important thing to me, that and having a reasonably low irrigation rate. I was kind of hoping that Miss Yelly would get on my side on that and argue for it to maybe compromise a little bit between the 32% I'm recommending and the 45 cents the division is. I would hope you could maybe settle in at around 38 cents or 35 cents on the irrigation rate. I often cannot read my own writing. Somebody, I think it was probably during Mr. Long's testimony, called our tap tiers arbitrary. They weren't arbitrary. They grew with the size of the lots growing down. The tap rates got smaller as the lots got smaller. So it wasn't an arbitrary thing at all. And I don't know why it appears arbitrary. But in any case, we realize we are in a situation where we will accept the decision of the commission, and we just hope you will take the consideration of us being a private company, a unique company, a very unique development, and really a very, very, very small part of the state of Utah, and maybe allow us to be a little bit unique. Thank you.
Thank you. The Utah State Legislature has delegated to the Public Service Commission an important role. This role encompasses setting rates, charges, and conditions of service for public utilities. To guide the Public Service Commission, the legislature lists things that the Public Service Commission should consider when setting rates. That's found in 54-4-4. The rate should not be unjust, unreasonable, discriminatory, preferential, or otherwise in violation of law. And then it goes on from there. To assist the Commission in fulfilling its duties, the Division of Public Utilities has been granted certain responsibilities. Those are found at 54-4A-6. And it is the obligation of the division to provide the commission with information to promote the safe, healthy, economic, efficient, and reliable operation of public utilities. Then I'll skip to provide for just, reasonable, and adequate rates. And then I'll skip down to D, which is provide for a fair apportionment of the total cost of service among customer categories and individual customers and prevent undue discrimination in rate categories. Following the statute down a little bit, the division is also charged with providing the Public Service Commission with information to protect against wasteful use of public utilities. The division has undertaken an extensive analysis in this case. The division has looked at the expenses of the company, the revenues of the company, and in the division's experience, the division has found that fixed costs should be covered in the base rate, and that there should be a capital reserve account. The division's rates have both of these needs met. The division's rates are just reasonable and in the public interest. And the division requests that they be approved. The division's amended rates are just reasonable and in the public interest and requests that the commission approve those proposed rates. Insofar as the interplay between Title 37, which addresses water and irrigation statutes, and Title 54, which addresses public utilities and public services statutes, that interplay will be explored in detail in my reply brief, and the brief will contain sections including but not limited to jurisdiction and other pertinent matters.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Yelly?
I recognize the difficulty of the nexus or the interrelationship between these two titles in the Utah Code. I believe that the water rights law puts the water rights that belong to individuals into a unique category, and whether or not it is subject directly to a tariff proceeding, it really has to be addressed in a tariff proceeding because it's the same system. And for that reason, I believe that the Public Service Commission should set that rate for the irrigation deliveries more or less consistently with Section 73-1-9. I believe that the accommodation to water rights holders to allow them to use their full right is not unduly burdensome and should be made. I don't believe that the developer's future system capacity needs should be a basis upon which existing water rights holders should be deprived of the ability to use their full water right. And I do not dispute Mr. Pace's suggestion that 35 to 38 cents might be a more fair irrigation rate. I don't know.
Mr. Pace, you get the final word.
Geez, I didn't know. I had another one. I would.
You don't have to.
Okay.
Done, you can.
I had something in mind, so thank you. I've got to remember what it was. It was something Ms. Schmidt was saying. It may have slipped my mind. I think we've said enough.
Well, with that then, we will close the hearing. The commission, of course, will hold any order until after briefing is completed. Ms. Yelly, I would ask you, if you read the division's brief and determine that you're not going to file a reply, would you please let me know so that we don't delay any longer than is necessary?
Yes.
All right. Any other housekeeping issues that we need to take care of before we close this hearing? Thank you all very much. I appreciate your time, and it's been the testimony and the discussion has been very, very helpful today. So thank you very much.
Your Honor?
Yes.
Is there going to be a public hearing tomorrow at noon?
There is a public hearing tomorrow at noon. Are people coming?
I doubt it.
As far as I know, nobody's requested to appear telephonically. I would imagine that most of your customers would want to rather than to drive up for that.
I think Ms. Goffin was the only one that was intending to drive up. I think there wasn't this being streamed today?
Yes.
So I know there are people listening in that may want, I guess we need to come at noon because we don't know. Is that what you
I'll say? Be here at noon and we'll be taking comments from anybody else who is here at noon.
Or calls in.
We don't have a plan to set up the phone because nobody's requested to call in.
Oh, okay. So if we all show up at noon and no one is here by 12:15, we're done.
We'll close it.
And for the purposes of those who may be listening, people can still file written comments by sometime tomorrow? Is there a deadline by which they would have to send
I don't believe comments? That a deadline has been established. If they want to submit an unsworn comment by writing, I will accept it. But it can't be sworn if it comes in that way, because any sworn testimony, in order to be considered sworn, it has to be subject to cross-examination. Okay? All right, and with that, we'll close the hearing. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
reservation. It's out the door.
I think we should be.